This is the NPR News Update. It's Minnesota's news on your schedule. It's Wednesday, June 11th. I'm John Wanamaker. Corporate annual meetings are typically pretty quick and uneventful, but Target's shareholder meeting this afternoon in Dallas is likely to produce some fireworks. Target has been a magnet for trouble in the past year, including a massive data theft, big losses in Canada, and customers toting assault rifles in stores. Martin Moylan has more.
Some shareholders want big changes on Target's board. The Canada Pension Plan Investment Board is one of the minor Target investors voting to boot out 7 of Target's 10 board members. The California State Teachers Retirement System, another small shareholder, is voting against the 3 members of the Audit Committee because of the group's spending. Ricardo Duran is a spokesman for the retirement system.
We don't expect our vote to move the company in any one direction, but we do expect our vote to send a signal to the management.
The anti-board votes are expected to be limited to signals, falling far short of the number needed to oust a board member. But there may be a lot of signaling when the votes are tallied. A big shareholder advisory firm is urging Target investors to oust 7 board members for failing to protect the company and its customers from the data breach. Ron Kalibi is vice president of the St. Paul-based Mars and Power investment firm. He says shareholders will be displaying serious displeasure if they give any board member less than 80% of votes cast.
Less than 80 would certainly send a message.
A director in an uncontested election must receive more than half the votes cast to be elected. An incumbent director who falls short of that must offer to resign. Then a board committee has 90 days to decide whether to accept the resignation and must disclose the reason either way. Kalibi says Mars and Power will vote to retain all board members, including interim chair Roxanne Austin. She's leading the search for a new CEO to replace the recently fired Greg Steinhoffel.
It would be quite disruptive at this point in time to replace 7 board members.
Kalibi says Target board members have done their jobs well, responding appropriately to the challenges facing the company. In advance of the meeting, Interim Board Chair Austin sent a letter to shareholders calling on them to re-elect all current board members. Austin wrote that under the board's direction, the company took significant action to address evolving cybercrime risks before the breach, investing hundreds of millions of dollars in security personnel, processes, technology, and related resources. Since the data breach, Austin says the board has overseen substantial efforts to better protect Target and its customers, including the accelerated adoption of so-called smart cards that are harder for crooks to compromise. And in a message to Target employees this week, interim CEO John Mulliken said the company is making progress in streamlining decision-making and making Target less bureaucratic. He wrote Target needs more leadership and less committee. It's hard to forecast how many shareholders will heed the call to purge the board, but chances are they'll deliver a strong message.
It is a fireworks moment.
Professor Michael Youssim is director of the Wharton Leadership Center at the University of Pennsylvania. He expects shareholders will stop short of voting out board members, but
I think inevitably the message will be delivered to the directors to delve more aggressively into making certain that there's no repeat or that other disasters that are lurking out there for virtually any kind of large company don't come home to roost.
Youssim's view is shared by Charles Elson. He's director of the Weinberg Center for Corporate Governance at the University of Delaware.
You've got a withhold recommendation on 7 directors. On the other hand, you know, the odds of them not winning re-election are probably not all that great, but it's a signal. It's a protest.
And rounding out the day's protests will be a few dozen mothers with children in strollers. They plan a stroller jam outside the shareholder meeting as they call on the retailer to ban the open carrying of rifles in its stores. Martin Moylan, Minnesota Public Radio News.
And Target in the news for another reason. The retailer has received a permit to start selling a full selection of wine, beer, and hard liquor at its store in Otsego, Minnesota this summer. This will apparently be the first Target in Minnesota to sell any alcohol with more punch than 3-2 beer and other low-alcohol beverages. The company declined to say whether alcohol will be available at other stores in Minnesota. The retailer currently sells beer, wine, and spirits at more than 1,300 stores across the country. Target began selling alcohol in 1996. Today, the U.S. Senate is scheduled to take up a bill that gives people with student loans new options for paying back their debt. The legislation would allow college and graduate students to consolidate their debt and refinance it at low interest rates. DFL Senator Al Franken is a co-sponsor of the legislation, along with Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren. Franken spoke with Morning Edition host Phil Picardi.
Senator Franken, why should reducing student debt be a priority right now?
Well, it's become a big macroeconomic factor. Now student debt has topped $1.2 trillion, and it's, economists agree that it's affecting our entire economy because students or graduates are not being able to do things like put a down payment on a house or start a family. They're delaying things like starting a family. They're not making the kind of purchasing a car. And part of this is just the amount of student debt they're carrying and the interest they're paying on the debt. And my bill, the bill I did with Elizabeth Warren, would let people in Minnesota and across the country refinance their student loan debt at lower rates. And that is coming up for a vote later today. This bill would help about 550,000 Minnesotans. It's almost one out of 10 Minnesotans would save money in repaying their student debt. Minnesota is fourth in the nation in the level of student debt at graduation, over $30,000 on average. And I talk to kids who, or not kids anymore, adults who have loans of over $100,000. They've gone to graduate school, and they're paying as much as 10% in interest. And you can refinance a home loan, you can refinance a car loan, a business loan, but you can't refinance your federal student loans. And I think that's just crazy and wrong.
And how does the bill align with the president's executive action earlier this week?
His executive action was different. It allowed people to take advantage of capping what percentage of your income that you pay toward your student debt. It had been capped at 10%, but only for people who incurred that over after 2007, and he extended that backward so that you can, if you pay less than, if you don't have to pay more than 10% of your income to actually paying off student debt. And if you do that for a number of years in a row, there's some forgiveness.
And how much would allowing students or former students to refinance their loan debt, how much would that cost the government?
Well, the way we've written this bill, it'll be made up for by implementing what's called the Buffett rule, which is basically saying people make over $1 million have to pay 30% on their income for income taxes.
The student loan bill faces stiff opposition in the GOP-controlled House, largely due to the tax increase on the wealthiest Americans.
Yeah, and I think this is a very good contrast to see who we care about. I mean, do you care about 550,000 Minnesotans who can save money on this, or you're focused on making sure that people over $1 million in income a year are paying less than most middle-class people?
Some of those Republican colleagues of yours might say the refinance proposal is just putting a bandage on an open wound. Why not close that wound and address college tuitions, which have far outpaced inflation in recent years?
Well, we were trying to do that as well, but that's no reason to do this, which will help so many people. No, I've had a number of proposals that will help keep tuition down, or at least have also helped students understand the true cost of college. I have a bill that's actually co-sponsored by a number of Republicans, Marco Rubio of Florida, Chuck Grassley of Iowa, to basically when colleges give their award letters, when they accept someone, to just have uniform language in that so you can really understand what you're paying for. Part of keeping the cost of college down is for state governments to be making sure that they're funding their colleges and the state colleges and universities, and that's what Governor Dayton and the state legislature have done this past year, and that has frozen tuition in the Minsky system in the University of Minnesota, and that's a very, very important thing.
That's Minnesota Senator Al Franken speaking with Morning Edition host Phil Picardi. The effort to bring a Major League Soccer team to Minneapolis is stepping up this week. Tim Nelson has details.
The Minnesota Vikings are announcing details of a professional soccer match between the Manchester City and Olympiacos football clubs on August 2nd. The game is scheduled for TCF Bank Stadium and will be part of a larger Guinness Cup series of 13 games across the United States this summer. It will feature some of the highest profile franchises in soccer, including Manchester United and Real Madrid. The game will also highlight soccer in Minnesota as the Vikings bid to win a Major League Soccer franchise for the state. The NFL team has exclusive rights to bring a Major League Soccer team to the new stadium in Minneapolis for the first 5 years it's open. Minnesota has an existing pro soccer team, the Minnesota United Football Club. Owners of that team have also scouted Major League Soccer prospects. They traveled recently to Kansas City along with representatives of the Pollad family, owners of the Minnesota Twins. Tim Nelson, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Minnesota Governor Mark Dayton is in Washington for 2 days of high-level meetings. Dayton's schedule includes a meeting with Minnesota's two senators and the Secretary of the Interior about federal funding for the Lewis and Clark Water Project. Peter Cox reports.
The partially completed Lewis and Clark Water Project is designed to distribute water from near the Missouri River into parts of South Dakota, Iowa, and Minnesota. Construction began in 2003, but federal funding mostly dried up 2 years ago, leaving the pipeline extending just a few hundred feet into Minnesota. The system would connect to Laverne and Worthington and two county water systems. Locals say the project would relieve a water shortage in southern Minnesota and help economic growth. State funding was approved by the legislature last month. Democrats Dayton, U.S. Senators Al Franken and Amy Klobuchar, and Congressmen Tim Walz and Colin Peterson are expected to push for federal funding. Peter Cox, Minnesota Public Radio News.
And tomorrow, Dayton has several meetings at the White House, including a tribute to the WNBA champion Minnesota Lynx. Earlier, the governor addressed the controversy surrounding the bid to convince the NFL to bring the 2018 Super Bowl to Minneapolis. As Tom Scheck reports, Dayton thinks some of the perks the NFL requested went way overboard.
Dayton says he isn't convinced that the benefits requested by the NFL are necessary, but suggested it's the price of doing business. The NFL has reportedly requested a long list of perks, including police escorts, high-end hotel rooms, and billboards, in exchange for allowing Minneapolis to host the big game. Dayton says he isn't sure which perks the private host committee has agreed to, but he says no taxpayer money will be spent.
The private sector is going to pay for those that were accepted, so you know it's part of the price to have the Super Bowl, but it doesn't fit with my personal taste.
The Minneapolis host committee has not released its bid to the public because they say they don't have to until the game is over. Dayton says he has no problem making the information public, but stops short of saying it should be legally required. Tom Scheck, Minnesota Public Radio News.
This is the NPR News Update. We come your way every day around noon. It's Minnesota's news on your schedule. The Independence Party of Minnesota will try to remain a major party this year with candidates who are mostly young, politically inexperienced, and in favor of changing the state's marijuana laws. As Tim Pugmire reports, this is the first campaign that IP candidates are running on a party platform that supports legalizing marijuana.
Brandon Borgos is a 32-year-old attorney who serves on the board of Minnesota Normal, the organization that lobbies for legalized marijuana. Borgos is also now running for Minnesota Attorney General as the Independence Party's endorsed candidate.
They wanted, in my opinion, to send a very, very strong message.
Borgo said he was approached by party officials and asked to run for office. He said his normal background was a factor in that invitation.
With the amount of people in the state who want some sort of marijuana reform, they wanted to bring in someone who has a very, very good amount of information behind him.
Other Independence Party candidates are also talking about reasons to legalize marijuana. John Denny, a 28-year-old law school student, is running for Congress in the 6th District.
We need revenue. Marijuana is producing a lot of revenue for Colorado right now. If you want to see more revenue in this state, That's one really strong reason to look at legalization, if you ask me.
Denny believes the war on drugs is a failed policy that should be ended. Hannah Nicollet, the IP candidate for governor, agrees. Nicollet said she thinks too many people are currently in jail for using marijuana or other drugs.
Putting nonviolent people in cages is a detriment to society, and giving people a criminal record when, you know, it makes it harder to get a job and it doesn't help them. I mean, even if somebody is an addict, something that's really, really destructive, like somebody's a meth addict, I don't see how giving them a criminal record helps that addict in any way. It should be treated as a social problem, not as a criminal problem.
Nicollet, who's 39 years old, supported Republican Ron Paul's presidential campaign 2 years ago and originally stepped forward as an IP candidate for U.S. Senate. She later switched to the governor's race. Her political resume pales in comparison to the IP's previous three candidates for governor, Tim Penny in 2002, Peter Hutchinson in 2006, and Tom Horner in 2010. Horner said he does not yet know enough about Nicollet to comment on her candidacy, but overall he said he's pleased to see more young people getting involved in the party that he still advises. On the marijuana issue, Horner has mixed feelings.
I think it's going to be an issue that probably on the whole is a plus for the Independence Party. But looking long term, I don't think the Independence Party is going to be successful if it is defined too narrowly around any single issue, even one that is as emotional and volatile as marijuana.
Independence Party Chairman Mark Jenkins said he doesn't think marijuana is a defining issue for the party or its candidates. He stressed that they remain rooted in the fiscally conservative, socially tolerant philosophy that Horner and other previous candidates ran on.
No one on our team, even Brandon, is running on marijuana as a sole issue. In fact, I'll be surprised if it becomes much of an issue at all in the election, because Minnesota's about more than just a plant.
Still, Jenkins insists that the party was changed for the better by its decision in 2013 to support in its platform the legalization, taxation, and regulation of marijuana.
When I came on as chair over 3 years ago, the party was afraid to take stances on major issues because the delegates felt that it might scare away candidates. When I came in, I said, we have to take stands on issues to attract candidates.
To retain major party status, the IP needs one of its statewide candidates to win at least 5% of the vote in this year's general election. Jenkins said he's not concerned about meeting that threshold. Tim Pugmire, Minnesota Public Radio News at the Capitol.
Data from Metro Transit show there have been numerous close calls between Green Line light rail trains and cars and pedestrians during test runs. Curtis Gilbert reports.
The test runs started in February, and since then, LRT operators have activated the train's emergency brakes on 14 occasions. Reports filed by the operators say the vast majority of those incidents were caused by cars or pedestrians allegedly violating traffic laws. There was also a case where a cyclist cut out in front of a train in the middle of a snowstorm. In three incidents, an LRT operator pulled the emergency brake when no pedestrians, cyclists, or other vehicles were present. All involved the same light rail operator. A Metro Transit spokesman said in an email that applying the emergency brake is a normal part of driving a train and not, in itself, a cause for concern. There have been four collisions between Green Line test trains and vehicles. The line opens this weekend. Curtis Gilbert, Minnesota Public Radio News.
And finally, it wasn't expected to be a controversial nomination. After all, ambassador to Norway is not a very high-profile position. Instead, the nomination of George Soonis to that position has turned into a minor embarrassment for the Obama administration. Several prominent Democrats say they won't vote for Soonis on the grounds he's not qualified. As Brett Neely reports, Minnesota's Norwegian-American community is behind the campaign to keep Soonis from becoming ambassador.
George Soonis is a wealthy New York businessman who also happens to have been one of the top donors to President Obama's re-election campaign in 2012. His January Senate confirmation hearing started innocuously enough.
I am both honored and humbled to appear before you today as President Obama's nominee to be ambassador to the Kingdom of Norway.
Then Soonis started flailing. It turns out the man who wants to be the next ambassador to Norway has never even been to Norway. And anyone who's been called on in class when they weren't prepared can probably sympathize with this moment when Sunnis responded to a question from Wisconsin Republican Ron Johnson.
There are a lot of markets that will continue to open up.
Let me just ask, as ambassador, how would you promote those trade cooperations?
Thank you for that save, Senator Johnson.
Then it went even further downhill. Sunnis said Norway has a president. It doesn't. The country has a king and a prime minister. Sunnis then described one of Norway's major political parties that's part of the current government as a fringe element that spewed hatred. Arizona Republican John McCain was unimpressed.
The government has denounced them. The coalition government, they're part of the coalition of the government.
Well, I would say, you know what?
I stand corrected.
Minnesota's community of Norwegian Americans, the largest in the country, have rallied against Sunnis' nomination. Leaders of Norwegian and other Nordic American groups have written op-eds, letters to influential organizations, and lobbied lawmakers.
It's a tight community, and we heard from them.
That's DFL Senator Al Franken. Last week, Franken, who's up for re-election this fall, announced his opposition to the nomination.
We want diplomats to be pretty good under pressure anyway, and he seemed not to be, and he displayed a tremendous amount of ignorance about Norway.
Senator Amy Klobuchar and House members Betty McCollum and Eric Paulsen, who co-chair the House Norway caucus, also opposed the nomination. Paulsen says sending Sunnis to Norway would be disrespectful of the two countries' long partnership.
You know, it's just difficult to foster a productive relationship with one of our best allies and friends in Norway when we pick an ambassador who's the punchline for late-night comedy shows.
The arguments Minnesota's Norwegians make against Sunnis aren't about national identity. Like Paulsen, they just think Sunnis will embarrass the United States. Ivar Sorensen is the former head of the Norwegian-American Chamber of Commerce. He isn't against sending wealthy donors abroad as ambassadors, but thinks they need to have some minimal standard of qualification.
Mr. Sunnis, unfortunately, failed the test, you know, in public view.
Sorensen, who immigrated to the U.S. from Norway as an adult, spoke from Oslo where he was vacationing. News of Sunnis' remarks made for some pretty unflattering headlines in Norway.
If he shows up here, he will simply not be taken seriously by the Norwegian government.
St. Paul lawyer Mike Davis, who helped orchestrate the campaign, says the nomination of someone who appears unfit for the job also sends a terrible message to the public.
You know, we should not have individuals who are fully unqualified for the position and being paid a salary that most Americans can never dream of.
No other senators have yet announced their opposition to Sunnis, but Davis and his allies are lobbying other members too. Sunnis' fate is ultimately up to the Obama administration and a Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, who has the power to bring the nomination up for a vote. Neither responded to an interview request. Brett Neely, Minnesota Public Radio News, Washington.
And that's the NPR News Update for Wednesday, June 11th. I'm John Wanamaker. Thanks for listening.